This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
And you gotta do it right. I know who's naughty and nice. We gotta do it, baby. Come on. Yeah. Santa slide. All right now. I need all my party elves to report to the dance floor right now.
Time to do some work.
Slide time, baby. Come on.
So Santa Solomon, which slide that got elves hollering? Ain't no stopping in. Me, we got the reindeer hopping in. Come on now. Then you slide, gangsta lean, take a sleigh ride and hop. Come on and hop.
On time, it's Santa slide. Take a sleigh ride.
Two-step move, then you slide.
Ha-ha.
Take a lean to the side. Take a sleigh ride. Come on and hop.
Clap your
one
hands.
Time and hop. And hop.
Clap your hands.
Hop. Turn and cha-cha. Cha-cha. Santa cha-cha, baby. Santa cha-cha. Santa cha-cha, baby. Santa cha-cha.
Checking it twice, already know who's naughty and nice.
Yeah,
party elves got work to do. Elves on the shelves, they slide too.
That's right,
you better slide, baby, move your feet. All the party elves get up out of your seat and slide.
Party
elves, slide. Santa
party
slide, baby. Then you slide.
Take a lean to the side. Take a sleigh ride.
Come on
and hop.
Hop. Over the hill.
Hop.
I'm paying the bills.
Hop.
Turn up, baby.
This is the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. I'm Jose Candelario, and today I have a local legend of music, radio, clubs, you name it, Doc P himself. What's up, Doc?
Hey, what's going on? It is the great Doc P in the house, dedicated on creating the poetry. You know, it's me. You can flow with me. What's good?
All right. We just heard your song. Where did it come from?
Well, you just heard the Santa Slide, okay, by my alter ego, which is Soul Santa Solomon, all right? And that's a character that was actually formulated last year when I was working with the National Black Doll Museum up in the Boston area. And, you know, we were doing some promotions. I was working with them and helping to promote their events through my platform that I have, you know, SM Enlightenment Radio. They had asked me if I would be interested in being a Santa for them, because they were acquiring new space in the Emerald Square Mall in Attleboro. And, you know, they asked me if I could be a Santa for them. They were doing an Ebony Village where it was like just a huge space of just Black Santas, nutcrackers, everything that you would think of Christmas, but all Black, you know.
Before we get into more of that, we're going to go back into it in a second, but let's get back. Mm-hmm. I really want to start from the beginning.
Okay.
Where are you from?
So I was raised in New York. I was born in Trinidad. Okay. And my dad was a chef and a culinary, he taught culinary arts in the West Indies, throughout the West Indies. And then he eventually made it over here to America and was doing the same thing, teaching culinary and working and grinding and doing a whole bunch of stuff. And that's where he, in Brooklyn, is where he met my mom. All right. And, you know, they were friends at first. And then my dad went back to Trinidad and my parents were pen pals at that point. And, you know, my dad had so much game. He was so good with it. Just with the pen writing in the letters, he convinced my mom to come and visit him in Trinidad. And she came and she ended up staying there for like a year and a half, almost 2 years. And yeah, they fell in love, got married, had me, and then they came back to Brooklyn. And
how were your younger days in Brooklyn? And you know, were you in the slopes, or were you in what part of BK?
Do or die Bed-Stuy all day, baby, all day. And you know, most of my family originates from Brooklyn and the Bed-Stuy section. All right. As a matter of fact, I in my family, you know, we're all musicians. You know, my first cousins ended up becoming Divine Sounds, who are hip hop legends with What People Do for Money and Do or Die Bed-Stuy. And they were actually one of the first hip hop groups out of Brooklyn with tremendous, tremendous influence. I mean, Big Daddy Kane came out of the same street right there, you know, in Bed-Stuy, you know. So as a youngster, my parents eventually moved north. We moved up to Westchester, but it's because my dad got a job as an executive chef at the White Plains Hotel. So every Saturday, the weekend ritual was that my mom would bring me back down to Brooklyn to visit my grandmother. Okay, and this happened throughout my whole childhood. So every Saturday was the day that I was looking forward to, because then that's when I could go back and play with my cousins. And my cousins, they were always doing something musical, you know. It's like, you know, playing instruments, playing music out in the park, you know. So I have, you know, Mike Music, Disco Richie, my first cousins, and then my other cousins, you know, Haq Islam, who was True Mathematics at first, who ended up discovering Maya and Drew Hill, you know. So every weekend we would have competitions as who could dance the best, who could sing the best, who could do this, who could do that, you know. It was always a lot of fun with us. So, you know, as we grew into adulthood, it's like, you know, we continued to do things in music. I mean, you know, our parents sort of groomed us that way. You know, I grew up learning a lot of instruments: saxophone, drums, keyboards, you know, and was always involved in bands as a young kid, you know. So You know, music was just everything to me until I became a teenager, and then it seemed like music was too much. And then my parents were like, hey, wait a second, we don't really want a musician, we want someone that's going to be a little bit more you know, studious here and become like a doctor or a lawyer. So they sent me away to boarding school, all right, you know, 10th grade. And I was unhappy there initially, especially because, you know, I'm in a big prep school, always the only black guy. And you know, it was like right then and there in like the middle of the you know, the whole growth of hip hop was happening at that time, you know, late 70s, early 80s. You know, I'm in a boarding school, and, you know, I'm writing rhymes, though, because that's what I was doing at home. So it was funny. I to my classmates, I was sort of like an entertainment thing, or maybe they were goofing on me, but they used to always say to me, say a rhyme, say a new rhyme, and don't say the same one you said yesterday. So it actually forced me to write every day, you know. Wow. So when I went back home, I was so much more of a better MC than everybody else. They was like, wow, you know, so yeah, you know, I'm writing every day. I got to, you know, because I got to keep up, you know. So that's
very competitive. Yeah. Before all we go on, you mentioned your father and the sacrifices he made. Yeah. What kind of an example was your father to you, and what kind of ethics did you get from him?
Well, my dad was very well known in his industry and in his community. You know, I was growing up in my dad's shadow because I was always the chef's son, you know. Everywhere I went, you know, in town, in White Plains, New York, where I was raised, people would see me and they'd be like, hey, that's chef's son. So it's, I think by the time I was a teenager, I had a real strong feeling to create my own identity. And, you know, in 77, 78 was when I discovered hip hop, you know, because we were really close to the Bronx, and we used to get the tapes that used to come up. And, you know, I never forget the first experience when I heard hip hop. It was before it was on records, and it was just somebody, it was a Zulu tape. Somebody was cutting up the beginning of Honky Tonk Woman by the Rolling Stones, you know, it's like tat, boom, boom, tat, boom, tat. And just somebody else on the echo chamber. Yes, yes, yo, you don't stop. I was like, wow, what is that? That's something that I want to do. You know, wow. I mean, that's where it bit me.
In the early days, before we get to, I mean, we could talk about music.
Yeah.
Your mom was there. She was supportive, sacrificing for you too. And what did you get from her?
So my mom gave me the soul. Okay. My dad was Trinidadian. My dad, you know, he knew a lot of the Calypsonians. He was friends actually with the Mighty Sparrow. And if it was up to my dad, I'd be playing steel pan, because he used to always have one for me in the house. And I tried playing it a little bit, but I mean, I didn't really take to it. But there was always a lot of Calypso, being played in the house. And West Indian music. And my dad also liked a lot of the standards. He loved Ray Charles. But my mom's record collection, and she had her own separate record collection. My mom had the James Brown records. My mom had the Aretha Franklin records. All right. My mom's favorite song that has the strongest impact on me was Mr. Big Stuff by Gene Knight, you know. And she used to actually always sing that to my dad. Who do you think you are, you know? So the real soul, the funk, is what it is that I got from my mom. And going down to Brooklyn every Saturday, visiting my grandmother, you know, there was a point when my grandmother, she used to just sit there. She was going blind from the diabetes, but she always had a fresh $20 bill in her hand, you know. And so whenever I was leaving, she would slip it to me. You know, it was a 20, it was a 10. She'd always slip me something. And I never forget on the walk going to the first subway to bring us to Metro North, there was a record store that was right there in Brooklyn that we used to pass by. And I used to always say to my mom, wait, I want to go in there. And she'd be like, well, where'd you get money? And I'd be like, I got money. And I'd always go in there. And that's where I, you know, in addition to my mother's records, then I was buying the Jackson 5 stuff. You know, the early Jackson 5 records and the Kool and the Gang, you know, the stuff like that. So I was always buying records now also and adding on to that soulful, funky collection. So, I think I had no choice. I had an older brother who was a real playboy. I mean, he was in Vietnam. He had gotten out. A little injured, but he was okay though, you know, and always had the nicest, flyest cars with the flyest sound systems. And as a little boy, some of my first memories is my oldest brother putting me in his car and just driving me around Brooklyn, blasting like James Brown and you know, Brass Construction and all of the funky stuff. So it's like, That became my slice of heaven, you know, just riding around and listening to that, you know, the bass and the guitars and the, you know, it's.
You're right now listening to the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. I'm Jose Candelario, and we're listening to the roots of music for Doc P, local legend here, DJ, I mean, one of the original MCs I heard rocking the mic at some of these clubs, especially the catwalk and all these places around town.
Alley Cat.
Alley Cat, sorry.
Catwalk, different type of club. You know.
Hey now.
Hey now.
let's not go there. Yeah, the Alley Cat down there on Crown Street. Yes, yes. So you got this foundation of music put into you, and you took it through college. Where did it now evolve into somewhat of a career for you?
Well, so coming out of boarding school, I graduated out of there in 1983. And at that time, when I came home to my original crew, because I had made a DJ organization, we were DJs, MCs, breakdancers, the whole thing. And we called ourselves Sound City Crew, which eventually evolved into Sound Masters. Now, calling ourselves Sound Masters, we saw that became a problem because there were so many other Sound Masters. So then we abbreviated and broke it down to SM Crew, all right? And then we say we are the original SM Crew. So when I came out of boarding school that summer, I started to discover that a lot of my guys that I was doing the hip hop with, they, you know, they moved on with their lives. They were taking on other hobbies. Some were getting in trouble and being incarcerated now. Some others were, you know, falling victim to, you know, the street stuff, you know? So I was feeling more alone. I was like, wow, you know, what am I going to do? I got to find other people that, you know, that are like-minded. And I got accepted to the University of Hartford, and I went to the University of Hartford, and that's where I met my next business partner, whom was Stephen Richardson, also known as the Grand Wizard Stevie D. And so we met in college, and we were roommates sophomore year in college, and, you know, he was the DJ, I was the MC. So now it's like there's the two of us. And we felt like it was the two of us against the world, because all we wanted to do was to play our music, you know, and we used to go all over the place trying to play. We went to the African-American Student Association. We're like, hey, please hire us. We're DJs and I'm an MC and we can rock the house. But, you know, in the early 80s, not everybody was so receptive to hip hop. Not everybody was into it. You know, even the black organization, they were like, oh, you know, we're not into all of that street music here. You know, they were more into the house DJs and all of that kind of stuff. So they wouldn't hire us. So what do? We just did what hip hop does. We found any electrical outlet that we can on campus. We plugged in. He start cutting beats and I'd start rhyming. And we started, you know, just making spectacles out of ourselves everywhere, all over campus, the cafeteria, the courtyard. We were just plugging in and we gained the attention of the university media. And then they were covering us. And then the university started hiring us to do the major, major events for the whole school. Wow. So, yeah. And then that's, so I would think that that was like our first taste of like success, like wow, you know, because when we were up there doing stuff and it like performing in front of thousands of kids, you know, it was awesome. Then all of a sudden now everybody wanted to hire us, you know,
and then everybody wanted to hire you. So yeah. you graduate from college now. How did you navigate hip-hop out of college? Did you find a legit job at first, or music was still happening for you?
Well, the plan was always to be recording artists, all right, from the beginning. You know, I mean, we graduating out at 87, you know, by that time, you know, hip hop was really alive and well. You know, my cousins were really, they were really doing their things. Divine Sounds was big at that time. We were happy. We got signed to, Ray Ray Records, which was B-Boy, a B-Boy record affiliate. That's the same record label that that initially signed Boogie Down Productions and a few other people. So we were on that roster and we were overjoyed, you know. But an interesting thing happened. We sort of got shelved, and they weren't putting our music out. They were going through, you know, started going through legal problems. BDP left that label, and then that label was kind of stuck, and then they weren't doing anything with us, but they weren't letting us out of the contract. So we had to fight to get out of that, hired a lawyer to get out of that. The same lawyer that got us out of that sent us to a recording studio in New York City to do some production work for something, for a production company. They wanted me to say some rhymes about dinosaurs. Dinosaurs here, dinosaurs there. Every kind of dinosaur, you know, real cornball dinosaur stuff. Joe Raposo wrote the rhymes from Sesame Street, and they were like, yeah, you know, we want you to do these things. They ended up selling that idea to McDonald's. That became the Dinosaur Happy Meal in 1988. It was a storybook and a cassette that told a story about Bones and Dodo, like two dinosaurs that met, you know, out in the wild, and they became friends, but they were very different. So it showed that how different people could come together and be friends and blah, 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 you know, it's all about friendship. But that sold 21 million units. So kids all over the country were hearing me rhyming about dinosaurs, but you know, we only got like maybe a couple of grand to do the work. But you know, I look back on that, so well, that was my stamp on popular culture, because I can go and YouTube those storybooks, and all the kids are saying, so many people, they are grown adults now, saying, wow, you know, me and my friends, we used to love the dinosaur rap. You know, the dinosaur rap was a big deal. So through the 90s, we continued to be ping-ponged, bounced around from record label to record label. It was a tough experience, you know. It was forcing me to do day jobs and regular jobs, you know. Which was all good. By the mid 90s, out of a lot of frustration, I said, you know, I really want to learn the business inside out. Now, I was a mass communications major. I had always done radio in college, and so in the 90s, when I decided to move from White Plains to New Haven, which I did in 1996, I wanted to get involved in radio. And I initially was trying to go to the University of New Haven radio station, because mm-hmm. It was really close, practically walking distance from where I moved to. And I don't know, I just had, that experience discouraged me. The person, the gatekeeper that was in charge of that, you know, really gave me a hard time. And I was like, wow, you know, I guess I'm not going to get on the radio out here. I didn't really think of YBC. I didn't think of that. They had the volunteer program then. I don't know why I didn't think of that. But I was in the nightclub. We were in the nightclub in it was the museum then, I think, before it was Van Dome. And me and Stevie, we were playing in there because we always played in nightclubs. You know, we were in Gatsby's. We were, you know, any nightclub that was out there. So it was really getting known just for being an MC in the club and just being a hype man and getting people into the music. And it was one night we was doing something and Juan Castillo heard me and he said to me, you know, have you ever thought of radio? And I was like, yeah, I did it in college. And I, you know, one day he's like, yeah, let's try this thing out. And
right there, yeah. 94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. You're listening to the Electric Drum. I'm Jose Candelario, and we're speaking with the great Doc P and his fledgling career on radio when he first got on 94.3 in the now mid to late 90s.
Yeah, 96.
96. How was your first show?
Well, the first shows that I was doing, it was I remember Juan would me and Juan brought me in with him. We were on the air together, and it was like we had like the dynamic duo, you know, and we were doing our thing, and you know, my energy was received well. So so then I ended up getting being my own show on Saturdays, and I fell in love with radio all over again. The radio bug really bit me hard to the point whereas, yeah, I was volunteering, but I was at the station all the time. I was just there. I just loved being there. I loved just being in the production studio and just, you know, messing around and you know, making promos and PSAs and all of that kind of stuff. And I think that, you know, I think Juan and everybody was looking at me, feeling sorry for me, said, we got to find a way to create a job for this brother because he's always here. So that's how it started. I started out being a receptionist and an assistant to Juan and all of that. And that's where I first started working at WYBC, and that actually blossomed into a real job, for real. I ended up becoming like a drive time personality, and then later on marketing director for the radio station, you know, working out of the Cox, you know, out of the Coxville when Cox was involved. And so that's like where it's like real, you know, I was really doing radio then and just really loving it.
And to this day, you can hear Doc P. He does several intros for 94.3. So if you're listening to the Drive at 5, I think he had you do a couple words off the top there because Reverend Hampton was saying that it was a fly intro and he appreciated it.
Nice.
So, and you also do the intro for the electric drum. So when you hear the top of the show, that's actually Doc P. doing his thing. Still in the business after all these years.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and yeah, I'm a production contractor, you know, so I'm always your guy when you want some promos or some drops and all of that. And I ended up moving further up into New England. And when I came up this way, up in the Rhode Island, Massachusetts area, My initial plan was to get involved in radio more, but then I really enjoyed just doing my own thing. And when I was on WYBC in the beginning, I was doing the programming that was called Spectrum, which was sort of like the urban programming. But then, like the college kids, before they had their separate station, they would go on at night. So I would actually go on that format too, like on like overnight, like late nights, like Sunday late night, and I would call that show Enlightenment because I would play like new music, stuff that you know wouldn't normally hear, you know, because I would have that freedom to do that, and that's where the concept of SM Enlightenment came from. So when I decided to make my own platform, that's what I call it, SM Enlightenment Radio, because it's sort of free radio, you know, radio that's more based on a mood or a feeling. So we call it Feel Good Radio at its finest, and we do podcasts and all of that. So, you know, that's what it is that I got into up here. But still, I mean, hey, my first radio love is always WIBC, and that's the reason why you'll always hear me there, because, hey, you know.
What's one of the things that you learned while working at YBC? And because you say you volunteered, you grew into the job. Yeah. Was it patience? Was it endurance? Was it just, you know, hard work? What really, you know, rounded you out?
I would say I learned that hard work was definitely important. But I think the biggest thing that I learned was to show love and to project love. You know, being on the radio, there was a thing that I stumbled upon saying when I signed off, that I thought was just a cool fly thing to say. I'd say positive is the attitude, you know. Whenever I signed off, I said, positive is the attitude. Do for self, be yourself, love yourself. You love somebody, let them know, because I love you. So pass it on. Mm-hmm. Seemed like something really fly to say. And so one day, somebody came to me and they told me that statement that I made was something that always grounded them. You know, like if they were having a bad day, or if something wasn't working well, or if somebody frustrated them, you know, they would say positive is the attitude, they, you know. And it was just a quote I got from a Jodeci song, you know what I mean? But it was something cool to say. So then later on, I saw that was really the driving force behind a lot of the success, was the way that I made people feel. And I think that was the most important lesson in life that I've learned from being at YBC, is that, you know, people will always remember how you make them feel. So if you make people feel good, or if people feel good because of you, you know, you'll always have a job. You'll always have, you know, you'll always have success. So, you know, that's what it is that I learned. So I actually made my statement bigger to positivity is everything, because it is.
Yeah. You're listening to the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. I'm Jose Candelario, and we're listening about the great career in music, made it, self-made man, Doc P in the building. So now I just want to, before we get into like the music and what you're doing as Soul Santa, what is it about being an MC and that endures time, and how important is that position in hip hop culture? Because it has evolved over time, but the hype man, the MC, the driver of the party is still the backbone, I feel, to a good party.
Yeah, and it always will be. It always will be. You know, the interesting thing about, you know, this music that people call hip hop is that, you know, when I was in college in the 80s, I was a mass communications major, and my thesis to graduate was, I made the contention that the quote unquote rap music, what they were calling rap music, was going to become the next popular culture music. And, you know, my professors looked at me like I had two heads. They're like, you know, you're gonna have to prove that, you know. And so yeah, it's simple to do. I mean, you know, and this is before the internet, so I had to do real research. And what I did is, in my paper, in my thesis, I traced American music back to West Africa. And the way that I put it out there was to say that, you know, the most basic forms of communication and, you know, that our ancestors utilized was, the voice, of course, and cadence, rhythm, you know, drums, you know, rhythm, you know, and basically that's all that hip hop is. Hip hop is a rhythm, it's a cadence, and it's a voice. You know, those are the two things that are most important. You know, so when a lot of our ancestors were brought over, you know, those of us that have those African roots, it was that became a form of communication for us. You know, the work songs, the call and the response. You know, the drums, that, you know, all of that. And I was researching a lot of that stuff. So I said, you know, all the forms of American music were birthed out of that. The blues, the gospel, you know, the so-called rock and roll, you know, all of those different things. It's just all in different phases in history. But all that hip hop was just another label that they put on the same thing that was always there. Was always there. So the people are always saying poetic rhymes to music, if they were singing it or if they were speaking it. You know, that has always been going on, always. You know, but it's just that in a different time, you know, people just would think of another way to classify it. The interesting thing about what people call hip hop is that there were other attributes that sort of came together all together at once. I mean, there was always graffiti. There was always people writing on stuff, you know, and there was always the form of dancing, you know, dance, you know, jitterbugging or just, you know, going off and doing different types of things. So, you know, I think in the 70s, you know, things started to come together, you know, in an interesting type of way, but all the individual attributes had always been going on. It's just that, you know, these things just sort of came together, you know, and, you know, hip hop culture is DJ culture, you know, the DJs that just, you know, set up music and play, you know, that's the foundation of it all. So what you always needed was you needed somebody eventually just to get on the mic, just to let you know who is DJing or to make an announcement, or every once in a while to say, hey, you know, somebody say ho, or throw your hands in the air, you know, and the call and response has always been going on. You know, the slaves in the field, they did, you know, their work songs. It was one person and everybody else followed, you know. Our military does that, you know. It's like one person and everybody else follows, you know. It's like you go through all of the different forms of music. Cat Calloway, hidey, 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 ho, you know what I'm saying? Call and response. It's always been there. So, you know, it's really nothing new. It's just like, you know, another... just another label to put on something that's
we can sit here and talk about music all night long.
And believe me, I can.
I know you can.
And I will unless you stop me, and I'm glad
I just want to do a continuance of this and talk about your new song and why you put it together and what's the message that you personally trying to get across with it.
So some really interesting things that God has brought into my life. In the last, I'd say, the last 5 years, I became a caretaker for my mom, who recently passed this year. So this year has been extremely rough for me. But, you know, I was caretaking for her. And it took over my life. It was round the clock. My mom had late stage dementia. She was in her 90s. And, you know, my dad had left us back in the 90s. But so since then, I always took care of my mom. Actually, I moved my mom to Connecticut with me when I moved from New York. And, you know, she had her place. I had mine. So, you know, we were always close. And, you know, her leaving me and passing away, I think, was probably the toughest thing that I've had to accept. But at the same time, while she was like seriously declining, like last year, that's when the museum asked me to be a Santa. And so I was like, take care of my mom. I would run over to the Black Doll Museum to sit down and be Santa. And sometimes I'd be a little bit down, you know, because I knew that the inevitable was eventually coming. But when I put that Santa suit on and the kids would see me, the joy that they had, it was like that same dopamine that I get, that same thrill, that hit, that high that I get from being on the mic and making people scream and yell or entertaining folks, it all came back all over again. And it was like, wow, you know, I really need to do this. And then I would tell the kids, positivity is everything. And I'd say, expect great things always, you know, and, you know, I'd say this Christmas is going to be magical. And if things don't go your way, don't let it get you down, because if you stay positive, you keep a positive disposition, it's like good things will always come to you. And I would say that, and that would bring me comfort from saying that to folks in that Soul Santa character. So I said, I got to do more. And how can I do more? I'm musical. Wait a minute. I need to do a song. I need to do a Christmas song. I need to do a dance. So Santa Slide was born. Soul Santa Solomon was born, you know, just out of doing that. And that's where it came from. And, you know, I put that song together to, you know, to as a source of joy for myself, as, you know, as I mourn, you know, the loss of my mom. You know, it's a way that gives me joy and happiness, and the way that I can spread it to other folks. I mean, I'm not the only one that's had a hard time. I'm not the only one that's had a hard year. And sometimes the holiday season isn't always the happiest for all of us. You know, sometimes it brings back, you know, bad memories, or maybe we got to deal with people and things we don't want to deal with. Hey, the Santa Slide could bring you together.
Wow. So. Oh, wow. The Santa Slide is out there, and you can hear it everywhere. You're listening to the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the Rhythm of the City. We're speaking with the great Doc P. Doc P, we're at the end of our conversation. We've heard your story. I thank you so much for all your time. What are your final words out there to the city of New Haven and the good people listening all over the world on YBC?
Positivity is everything. So maintain your disposition at an optimistic vibrational state of gratitude. In other words, be grateful. All right. And check out the Santa Slide. Learn the Santa Slide, because Santa Solomon says, when you learn the Santa Slide, all of your wishes will come true. So even if you've been naughty all year, if you learn the Santa Slide, it can actually expunge your naughtiness.
Excellent.
So learn the slide.
You have been listening to the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the Rhythm of the City. That has been the great Doc P, local legend.